This is Shamir Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/free-business-bundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/free-business-bundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Hey everybody, I'm here with portrait photographer Joey Jones. Joey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And you know, I'm so excited to chat with you because you have so much photography experience, but also business experience. And you know, I firmly believe that when you're in business for yourself, the two things go hand in hand, but a lot of times it's undertaught or not addressed in schools. So, you know, one of my favorite parts of the interview was actually the business conversation. And so first of all, I just thank you for taking time to chat with us today.
That's my pleasure.
You know, first things first, I'd like our listening audience to get familiar with you, for those of them who may not have heard of you. So give us an overview of yourself and your background and how you ended up where you are today.
Sure. Okay. So I'm currently in my 20th year full-time studio owner and photographer. I started out, my interest in photography started when I was about 3 years old. The famous photograph of the Viet Cong being executed in Vietnam, the Eddie Adams photograph. Mm. I was only three. I saw the picture. It affected me.
Wow.
And I started looking at photographs from that point on. So as I got older and, you know, got my first paper route, I used to read Life magazine from cover to cover. I was more fascinated with the photographs than necessarily reading the articles. But that came as I got older and, you know, was better at reading through school and stuff. Junior high school, I was the photo editor of our junior high school yearbook. And I went to a trade school. I'm a product designer, a draftsman by degree.
Hmm.
But I pretty much ran my high school. And one of the numerous committees I was on was the yearbook staff. And my senior year, the school photographer asked if there was someone that could take photos around school when he wasn't there, kind of like candid stuff. And I was the first one to raise my hand. I said, I want to do it. And he said, do you know how to use a camera? I said, nope. So he had an old Canon AE-1 film camera, 35 millimeter. He showed me how to load the film, how to get the needle in the middle through, you know, aperture and shutter speed and all that. And off I went. And I thought I was Alfred Eisenstadt. And I went off to do a photo essay of a day in the life of Oliver Wolcott Tech in Torrington. And I picked four food groups of kids in school. There's the jock, the burnouts, the nonconformists, and the brainiacs. So I picked a friend from each group, followed them around for a day, photographed what a day was like for them, put together a body of work. I didn't realize it was a photo essay is what I was doing, but you know, our school photographer saw when we were in the yearbook room one day, and he's like, this is a genius. How'd you know to do this? I said, you know, I've been reading Life magazine. I've been doing interested in documentary work for a long time now. So that's how I got bitten by the bug. You know, the photo bug was at that point. So bought a point-and-shoot camera, went off to college. I started out in engineering, transferred over into political science, worked in government for about a year until I realized they're all crazy and got out and went back into industry. And I worked for a Fortune 500 company in medical products doing product design. And started moving up in the company into middle management. And I was an athlete. I was a cyclist at the time, and I had a pretty bad crash, ended my career. And between that and the stress of the corporate world, I needed to find something else. And it was photography. And I went back to photography. My wife, I blame my wife for my career because she bought me my first real camera. So when she complains that I'm not home, I say, well, it's your fault. You started this. You know, but I started teaching myself. I did not go to school for photography. I got, you know, my first Canon EOS 1 film camera. I think it's the best camera they ever made. And I learned from the Kodak photography series books from the our town library. I would go in, grab a book, go through the whole book, photograph, go chapter by chapter, and literally taught myself that way. Once I got really good at it, I started getting more involved in the arts, and I joined creative arts workshops in New Haven, Connecticut. I worked as a darkroom monitor for a little while and met this guy, Harold Shapiro, who is a brilliant commercial industrial photographer, and he was doing a class called Concerned Photography. And we paired photographers up with nonprofit organizations to do documentary work that they could use for their marketing, advertising, or when they're seeking funding or whatever. And because I had the most experience, I did Habitat for Humanity in New Haven. And I did a 2-year documentary of these women's builds down around Yale University and Albertus Magnus College. And my doctor saw a slideshow that I did for them at a fundraiser, and he asked me to photograph his wedding, you know, next time I was in his office. And I looked at him, I said, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know the first thing about weddings. And he said, you don't have to. Just show up with a bag of film, your camera, and just do what you did for Habitat. Mm. And I thought, oh, hell, I could do that. So, and he tells me it's in Rhode Island. Wow. So I'm like, okay. So that was my first paid job. And he's like, how much do you charge? He's like, I don't know. I've never done this before. So I said, you know, give me $200 and I'll come out and I'll shoot the wedding and we'll just take it from that point. Mm. You know, so I shot his whole wedding. 90% of it was in black and white, 35mm. And I had invested prior in a Bronica 645 medium format camera. So I shot the groups and stuff with the large format, and then the rest of it was 35mm because that's what I knew. It was documentary work. Mm-hmm. And hand printed everything except for the color film. And wow. All his friends started calling me after that and wanted me to shoot their weddings. And before I knew it, I was like, okay, well, this is pretty cool. So about literally 6 months after my very first job, I ended up quitting my job and opened a studio.
Wow.
Never looked back.
Now, I have to ask you, for that first wedding, was it what you expected?
Yes, because of my interest and my knowledge of documentary work, that's mm-hmm. how I approached it. I approached it as, remember the life books, A Day in the Life Of? Mm-hmm. And they would do A Day in the Life of Spain, A Day in the Life of Moscow, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I used to love those books. I collect photography books, and those are some of my favorites. And I looked at the wedding day as an assignment, as a day in the life assignment. So to me, it wasn't photographing a wedding. It was photographing a day in the life of a bride and groom. So I approached it a little differently. So when I got there, yeah, I had been to weddings. I've attended weddings before. So I kind of knew kind of what goes on, just not from that point. So I should say, too, that when I was in college, a buddy and I started a DJ company. So I used to DJ weddings. So I knew some of the wedding industry prior, but not from the photographer standpoint. So I just went at it as, you know, just documenting the wedding day. And so it was probably more than I expected. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an 18-hour day that day, so
wow,
that I didn't expect, but yeah.
And you know, it was, I see document style weddings quite a bit now, but back then I would imagine it wasn't as popular as it is today.
Yeah, people didn't get it. I mean, I'm going back to the days of Dennis Reggie, you mm-hmm. know, who I guess is credited with, you know, the creation of wedding photojournalism, you know, and I remember, you know, all the pushback back in the time, like, oh, there's no such thing as wedding photojournalism. It's like, well, he's doing it, you know, and mm-hmm. it kind of caught on. So, you know, there's photojournalism. I called it documentary because that's kind of more what I did. But yeah, no, it was fun. I mean, I built my career in the first 10 years doing weddings. And within a couple of years, I was flying around the country shooting them. So, you know, it's been a good run.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Now, for the benefit of our audience, what area of photography do you focus on today?
Portrait. I'm a portrait photographer. I do very few weddings now. The weddings that I do now are really for former clients, either high school senior clients or a family client, or sometimes, like I just started working with this insurance company doing photography for a rebranding effort that they're doing. And I just started last week at an office here in Connecticut and met a guy whose daughter's getting married. You know, I'm there photographing his board meetings. And by the end of the day, he's like, oh, I'm going to hook you up with my daughter. She's getting married. So I'm like, okay. You know, nice. So it's people that I know. I don't advertise. I've never advertised, actually.
Wow.
All of my work has been through word of mouth.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
So then tell us, Joey, how do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot?
You know, even after 25 years now, if I count the first 5 years I was doing part-time wedding, I'm still obsessed with creating. absolutely obsessed. Like every day, you know, I photograph a lot of high school seniors. Mm-hmm. And I love that work. And I look forward to creating the next iconic image of a kid. And I love, you know, I'm a people person. I mean, that's like one of those corny things to say. you know, I'm a people person. But my career's been more about photography. It's been more about the life and the people that I meet and making friends and, you know, just the enrichment that I get from it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's constantly inspiring me. You know, I love the stories. You know, when I photograph a senior especially, I never talk about photography. You know, I talk about them. Like, what's your plan for the future? Where are you going to go? Are you going to go to college? Are you going to go to military? Are you going to go right into the workforce? What's your family life like? Mm-hmm. You know, how's school going? Is there anything I can help you with? You know, wow. I've mentored close to 40 kids now that have gone off to photography, graphic design careers, marketing careers, that have interned with me and worked with me and stuff. And that's what inspires me is that part of it. You know, the inspiration for creating images that's kind of an offshoot from the inspiration I get from meeting that next really cool person, a really, you know, cool kid, or, you know, having a beer with the CEO of this, you know, insurance company at the end of the day. You know, that inspires me, you know, to go out and do like really great work for him, you know. It's just constant. I'm really obsessed with creating images still. So the inspiration, it's not like I go around like looking at other people's work, stuff like that to inspire myself. I do enjoy looking at stuff. Like I said, I collect photo books and stuff. My visual perception for my own work really comes from Richard Avedon. I loved Richard Avedon's work. Mm-hmm. I love the work of the photographers for Vanity Fair magazine. Mm-hmm. That's kind of more along the style of work that, you know, I want to try and emulate. So that, you know, that would inspire me too. I guess if you're looking for like a specific thing to inspire me is really like celebrity portrait work. Yeah, commercial portrait work of, you know, corporate people and stuff like that.
You know, I think you totally nailed this answer, even in the first half of your answer. Not that there is a wrong, you know, incorrect reply to this question, but I really think that you hit something very important on the head. You hit the nail on the head with the relationship building. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you're inspired by the relationships that you can build with people and also telling their stories, which...
No, that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I said, the images are actually secondary to me because, you know, my life is so enriched by the people that I meet on a daily basis. To me, that's more important than the images. The images come from that. And I create really, really cool stuff because of those relationships that I build with those people. And, you know, it comes back tenfold in return because I literally have like no advertising budget. I don't need one because the relationships that I build with my clients, it's all word of mouth. I've never needed to look for work. I've never needed to look for the next client. They come to me.
Mm. And by the way, I don't think you being a people person is corny. I think that is that is quite awesome. And it took me some time even to realize that putting your subject at ease and getting to know them definitely is beneficial. I mean, for the photos themselves, I remember early starting off shooting with clients and I was nervous, and that definitely came through. And so as far as asking them questions about themselves or engaging them, I didn't do that right away. And so even looking back at the photos after, they kind of have this deer in the headlight look, you know, and I'm like, ah, come on. And so it took time for me to realize that I need to have some kind of conversation with them and put them at ease. And like you said, build relationships.
Yeah, that's that learning curve. You know, when you're first starting out, you're the only thing that's in the back of your mind when you're first starting out is technical, is, oh my, I better not screw this up. And you're thinking, because you're just starting out, you're thinking, back in the days of roll film cameras, like before you head out to a wedding, we used to go through all these checks, you know, make sure your equipment's just working before you even leave, you know, or, you know, you'd be in the middle of a wedding and like your film back would jam on the camera and you got to figure out how to get the, you know, the slide in there and get the back off and change out and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, when you're first getting started, if you don't have that technical proficiency that you think you need, you're fumble and you don't have a relaxing conversation with your subject because you're still worried about getting the photo right. Is the light right? Is my exposure going to be on? Is the pose correct? You know, and the more you do, the more you shoot, the more you create, the easier that part of it becomes. So when you have the technical proficiency behind you, the conversations just flow. You know, and that's something that comes with time. It's always been easy for me. I'm a talker. You know, I assisted a buddy of mine for 5 years when I wanted to learn more. When I taught myself all I could learn from, you know, the books, the Kodak books, you know, I sought a mentor. And my mentor is Ralph Panagrosa, who is just a brilliant commercial photographer. And he's very left brain. He's very technical. He was a product photographer. And I'm very right brain. So, but I come from a technical background, so I'm kind of a mix between the two. And I said, you know, if I learn from him all this technical stuff, you know, the creative side will be able to just flow from it because I won't have to think about how do I do this or how do I do that. I'll know it cold. So I actually sought out the person who could teach me the stuff that I would be the worst at, which is, you know, actually how to create something like, you know, camera equipment, exposure, lighting, all that stuff. And now it's second nature to me. So I don't have to think about what I'm doing. I can just concentrate on having a great conversation with my subjects.
Wow, that's go ahead.
The images come from that, you know? They come from that relationship. And, you know, I love it when a person like at the end of like I'm famous for going off on a 2-hour session and coming back 4 hours later, you know. Because we'll go out and we'll be shooting. I'm like, oh, man, look at it. Let's go over here. Check this out, you know. And there's always one more image like 100 yards away. You know, there's something else we can, you know, a background or a scenery that we can use or, you know, or the conversation will just be flowing and I don't want to stop it. So I'll just keep shooting, you know. And I'm pretty famous for that. And I'll just my buddy Ralph and I would sit in a car. We would drive for like 3 hours for a job and we'd never turn the radio on. And there would never be silence in the car. We'd always be talking, you know. So it's easy for me. It's not easy for other people. When I would teach at like the Seniors Ignite event or at SPA, Senior Portrait Artist events, people would ask me, like, how do you get these amazing images of these kids like laughing and smiling and goofing around? And I never understood that question. And I would say, what the hell do you do during a session? Do you talk to people? Do you... You know, it's one of the things I never talk about photography. And when I create a really like sick image, I still get excited about it. And I'll whip the camera. I was like, come here, check this out. And I show him the back of the camera. I was like, no, this is cool. We're onto something here. Now let's play off of this and we'll just, you know, kind of keep going. So I asked people, like, I don't understand that question. Like, how do you get people to do this stuff? It's like, what do you do during a session? And it's always because they're either newer or uncomfortable with people. That they have that disconnect, they have that problem putting their, you know, subjects at ease and stuff. I said the technical stuff will come. Immerse yourself in the technology and immerse yourself in education on the photography side of it, because when you get that down, the rest of it is a piece of cake. You don't have to worry about it. You can just talk to people, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I never talk about photography. It's always about them.
So
I basically conduct interviews almost.
An important, I guess, a huge part of what makes you successful comes naturally to you as far as being able to engage people and getting them to relax and loosen up. And by the way, very astute observation of you years ago to get your, I guess, the more formal training from your mentorship. You know, that's huge, huge.
Yep.
And even though you've had no, I guess, formal schooling as far as photography, frankly, I don't think that makes a difference because you were willing to put in the time to learn your gear. And that just apparently has made all the difference in the world, that real world practice and experience.
Yep. You know, when I mentor kids, you know, I'll like guest speak at like one of the photography classes or something at the school. And, you know, I used to teach a kids on campus program years ago at a community college nearby. The first 2 days we just worked on their cameras and it's like, okay, let's see your camera. Now, where's the manual? And they're like, oh, I was like, read the manual, you know? And a great story, there's, you know, when the Canon was the D60, I think it was like the D30 and the D60 came out way back at the very beginning of digital. I had a friend who had gotten a D60. I mean, once it came out, it was like the hottest thing. It was hard to get them. And he got one. And I didn't know he got one, but I don't know. It was like a good solid 6 or 7 months after the D60 was released, I get a phone call. And he said, hey, so, you know, I have a D60. I have another one. I ordered two. And I got the first one. And the second one came in at, you know, the camera shop. And I haven't even opened the first one yet. So I told him, if you want it, you know, they can give it to you. So I was like, sure. So I drove down to this place, you know, Milford Photo, and grabbed the camera, hopped the train, took the train from Milford down into New York City. I went to B&H. I went, you know, up to the Canon counter and said, what do I need for this camera? I need, you know, flash units. I need cards. I need card readers, all this stuff. So I read the manual to the camera on the train on the way into the city, which is about an hour and 10 minutes. Bought the flash unit, bought the cards, bought stuff. Read the manual to that stuff on the way back on the train and shot a session the next morning. It was perfect.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I tell, you know, and this guy didn't take the first one out of the box yet because he was afraid of it. So when I mentor kids, I said, you know, you want to get good at this, you need to know your equipment. Grab the manual and read it cover to cover. Just read the manual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have, like, you know, parents of seniors like, oh, you know, I do classes. I want to learn classes. I'm like, here's the classes. Like, bring your camera down. So they bring the camera down, right? First thing, I open up the bag. I grab the manual. Say, here you go. Just read it. Once you've read it, call me and, you know, I'll show you some tips.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of gear, I'd like to briefly touch on what type of equipment, what type of gear you're currently using. And
sure.
And I don't want to linger on this too long because after that, we're going to get more into the business side of everything. But what's your typical go-to gear for a session today?
Okay. So my brain first, my mouth second. Mm. And I shoot a Nikon D3,
mm-hmm.
and my go-to lens is an 85mm.
Awesome.
That's what I do. So in the studio, I use the Alien Bees in my studio. I used to shoot with the, power lights. Can't remember the brand. There's one right above my head here. Anyway, I used to shoot with these, and they're big, heavy things. And when I started shooting more location stuff, I was like, I can't lug this stuff around. I had these lights that were like, you know, 7 pounds. I'm like, I can't use this stuff. So I switched to the Alien Bees because they're so light. They're small. They're compact. On location, I bring one Alien Bee with my Pocket Wizard and my TT Mini on my camera. And, you know, off I go. So I really like the Alien Bees. I think Policy Buff Company is phenomenal. If I ever have a problem with something, I send the stuff down. It comes right back. They're a great, great company to work with. I use the Vagabond Mini battery pack when I'm out on location with one of my Alien Bees. And I can't tell you, if there's water around, this is just me, if there's water around, I'm usually in it somehow when I'm shooting. This is one of Joey's dirt bag moves.
I've gone
through, I don't know how many Vagabond Minis. I'll be out, you know, in the river across the street, and you know, it'll fall in the river, and, you know, and I'll send it down and say, hey guys, I dropped it in the water. and it's not working. And it's usually a capacitor or something has to be replaced. They fix it and they send it back. I'm like, how much show you? It's like, I don't worry about it.
Wow.
And I'm like, no, seriously. They're like, that was my mistake, you know? And they're like, yeah, don't worry about it. It was a quick fix. You know, they've done it twice. They've done that twice for me now. And I was like, I promise I'll stay out of water. I'll put it in a bag or something. But yeah, for me as a portrait photographer, you know, I started out with, when I was shooting weddings and I was doing, like, when digital came out, I used to, back in the days of film, I had a Bronica 645. I used to go through tons of 220 roll film and 35 millimeter. And I used to get criticized, you know, by the old schoolers back in the day in the late 90s, early 2000s, that you can't shoot weddings with 35 millimeter. I'm like, I'm doing it. You know, not only am I doing it, I was shooting, you know, like T-Max 3200, you know, for a while, because I wanted the grain structure. And then, you know, Fuji came out with some phenomenal films. The Neopan 1600 was one of my favorite films to use back in the wedding days. And then just before film made an exit, they came out with Acros, the 100 ISO black and white film, which I thought was like one of the best tools. I look at film back in the day as a tool also. The film was just as much of a tool as your camera was. And then when I started with digital and stuff, there was, you know, the two basic lenses, your 2470 and then your 7200. Those are the two lenses. And you can literally do everything you needed to do with those two lenses. I used to shoot that all the time. And you know, I went back to just using prime lenses literally this year.
Wow.
And I have, you know, the 85, I have a 50, and I have the Nikon. It's the 14 to 30, or 14 to 24. It's a super wide angle zoom on, which is a blast. But I was out in California back in February, and Sigma representative was out at this conference, and he had the 35 millimeter art lens, and he's like, dude, try this. So, you know, I was photographing kids for a Brandy Melville campaign, and I grabbed this lens. I'm photographing with this lens. I'm like, this is sick, you know? And, you know, and then the technical, you know, the technical product designer in me from my, you know, my teens and 20s comes back out, and I'm like, how can the difference between 7 blades and 9 blades be so significant, you know, in the lens? And it's fascinating to me. And so I'm like, okay, I got to get one of these lenses now. So that's my next purchase, is going to be a 35 millimeter art lens from Sigma. It's just, I shot with it. It is just amazing. So that'll be another fun lens to use.
So here's a question for you. What's your favorite photography accessory other than your camera, and tell us why?
Let me see. Accessory. That's a good question. Favorite photography accessory.
It's what I do.
You know, I'm so, let's see, everything I do is so simple. I don't really accessorize. I tell people too, it's not a cop out, you know, but my brain, really, in my mouth, being able to talk to people, I think is a pretty important accessory.
That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. But let's see, you know, seriously, when you photograph people, you better be able to have a conversation with them. You know, and there's 16 personality types, you know, if you go by the Myers-Briggs. And being able to understand that and understand psychology, that's huge for what we do. When you think about it, your cameras, your lenses, your film, your cards, whatever, those are just tools. Okay? You can make an amazing photograph with a disposable camera if you can engage your subject and compose compelling images. So by changing booth, okay, that's an accessory that I love. I just thought of, well, I'm looking around like, what's really cool that I use? I use, a fan in a studio. When you're photographing a high school senior, break out a fan, and you watch their faces, you know, light up with a big smile. And it's like, oh, the fan's coming out. I'm going to blow your hair around. It's like, yeah, it's a fashion now, you know? And they go, it's like they get so excited, and they turn into like a completely different person with their hair blowing. So a fan is a great accessory in the studio. And out on location, I have a skivvy changing booth. You know, it's one of those things like a collapsible reflector. It's a collapsible changing booth. And, you know, you just, you know, you pop it up and, you know, you're off on location and you got need to change clothes. There's nowhere to change. You know, I'm not going to send a kid into a, you know, a McDonald's bathroom to get changed or something like that. Mm-hmm. So when we're out somewhere, I'll just pop up my Skivvy changing booth. And that's a phenomenal accessory to have, because you can just flow from, you know, right through your session and not have to worry about, okay, where am I going to get changed? I'm going to go run behind a tree or something like that. These things are great. They're great accessories.
Excellent, excellent answer. And you know, by the way, I like your brain answer as well. I think one of the overarching themes of this interview, what I'm picking up, is that, like you said, your camera, your lenses, your accessories, those are just tools. I mean,
they're
really
just tools.
Right. Yep. You bring so much to the table yourself.
Correct. And that's, it's seriously, I mean, so the first year I taught this Kids on Campus program to these kids, you know, I had eight to 15 year old kids in these classes.
Wow.
And one kid, they show up the first day of school. I says, you know, bring whatever camera you have. You know, we're going to be doing 35 millimeter or whatever. One kid shows up with a Hasselblad, right?
What?
I guess his dad was a former.
Are you kidding
his dad
me?
Was a former wedding photographer. And another kid comes with, you know, they stopped at the drugstore on the way and picked up a disposable camera.
Aww.
And so I'm looking, you know, the various between the kid. One kid had a Pentax 6.7. Where the hell did you get that thing, you know? And I'm looking at these cameras, and some of the kids are looking at each other and like, oh, I've only got this like dollar disposable camera I just bought at the store. I'm like, look, don't worry about it. I says, you're going to make just as good of an image as the kid with the Hasselblad over here because the camera's just a tool. It's what you do with it that counts.
Yeah.
Okay. And for me as a portrait photographer, it really comes down to my brain, my quick wit, my ability to engage people. And like, I can grab any camera. Like, my friend Matt Hoagland did an interview with me, and he was asked me, he said, one of the funniest things that he said that he enjoys when we go to these conferences together, he's like, if I'm teaching, like, I'll walk downstairs and he'll say, okay, what do we have for equipment today? And I'll just look at something. Yeah, that'll work. This will work, you know. And I just, you know, if it's a piece of equipment I haven't used before, it's pretty easy to figure out how something works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So take a quick run through. It's like, okay, this is what I have for a light modifier. This is what I have. Okay. And then you just do it, you know? And then the photography, the image comes from my conversations and my ability to engage my subject.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I could have used any camera. I could have used any light source, you know, any props. But the image really comes from that person. And that personality has to come out of that person. And as a portrait photographer, that's your job, is to make sure that that's what comes out, you know, in your image.
Yes.
So really it comes down to your brain, your personality. I could use any equipment. It doesn't really matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt Hoagland, he's awesome. I just talked to him this week.
He's a blast.
Yeah.
He's a riot.
He's very cool. He's very cool. Yeah. And, you know, I wish I would have had this conversation. I've said this numerous times on the podcast. I wish I would have had these conversations years ago.
Yes.
One thing you mentioned, the camera's just a tool. It's what you do with it that counts.
Mm-hmm.
If I could have known that, it would have saved me so much heartache and, you know, even insecurity. Because when I first started off, I was so insecure with my equipment. I'll admit it.
Right.
You know, and I think that's an issue with a lot of photographers. It's easy to get sidetracked by your equipment and lose focus on what's really important, which is what you're, you know, what you do with that equipment is the important thing, and building relationships and drawing out the personalities behind your clients and storytelling, even visual storytelling. There's so much more to it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. It's like I've seen, you know, I've been around a long time. I was on the board of directors of Connecticut PPA for a while back in the early 2000s and stuff. And, you know, I still see professionals who are so engrossed in equipment and what's the next new gadget. And every time they start to turn a profit in their business, they're out buying something else. I'm like, what are you going to do with that? Why did you just buy that? Dude, did you pay your rent this month? You know, you know, do that first. It's like, oh, I'm going to get this new lens and I'm going to be like, you know, the coolest photographer in the land because I'm going to get this, you know, 400 millimeter, you know, F4. I'm like, no. You're not. You know, you're going to do the same thing you do with your 200 millimeter, just from a further distance, you know?
Right, right.
And they literally be, it's like camera club mentality, where you have these professionals, they geek out on equipment and they go out and they spend all this money on gear, but they don't know how to, you know, if they're portrait photographers, they don't know how to engage a person for that gear to make something more compelling of an image than they have in the past without that piece of equipment. You know?
Yeah. Or even the whole Team Canon, Team Nikon debate. You know, I personally,
oh,
Who cares? I mean, I started shooting Canon because for me, years ago, when I was working at a magazine and we were doing our own photo shoots, all of my coworkers had Canon. So I can't even say that I put a whole lot of scientific thought into what brand I should use. It was just, oh, they have Canon, so I'll just shoot Canon. But really, you know, it doesn't matter what brand.
Yeah. So here's a funny one. Farood Zahidi, I believe that's his name. He's a commercial photographer, fashion photographer. When Madonna had Baby Lourdes and the pictures came out in People magazine, there were also BTS photos of the shoot. And there's this guy with a Sony point-and-shoot camera standing over top of him on the bed taking pictures with a Sony point-and-shoot. This guy is probably making like $20,000, $30,000 or whatever, you know, to do these photographs. And he's got a point-and-shoot.
Wow.
And that, you know, I remember seeing those images, like, you know, the behind-the-scene images. I'm like, okay, wait a second. Here's this guy who's like one of the biggest fashion photographers in the world. And he's got a point-and-shoot camera. He's taking pictures of Madonna and her baby. And that's how she's going to introduce her to the world. And I'm like, how freaking cool is that?
I love it.
You know? I said, this guy's got balls. He's got a point-and-shoot camera photographing, right?
Oh, my goodness. That is awesome.
It cracked me up.
Oh, well, you know, let's transition into, I don't have a graceful segue for this right now. So we're just going to transition into the business side of running a photography business, which, by the way, I think we've touched on that a bit already, even talking about relationship building with the people that you're shooting. But specifically for you, Joey, what's been the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself?
Oh, God, that's easy. The most challenging part of business is allowing myself to take some time off.
Really? Okay.
The whole work balance life thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always on, so to speak. And it's like if I go away for a few days, I have like anxiety.
Wow.
And I'm like, because there's always, I'm like, okay, what was on my plate back at the studio? What was coming down the pike? You know, what's in the funnel? You know, what's... Okay, so I was raised a workaholic. Okay, so I'm from that generation, you know, I'm a founding member of Generation X, but you know, from my parents, you know, who were, you know, just workaholics, and I was raised as a workaholic, my two brothers, my sister, it's just who we are, and it's hard for me to turn it off. And I've been getting better now that I'm a little bit older. I'm getting better at it, but still it's, you know, trying to balance. I've got all this work that I'm doing, all this work that I want to do, and I need to be home, you know, with the family. And, you know, my son's, you know, 11 years old, he's playing hockey. And if you know anything about hockey, man, it just consumes your life. And you know, I played hockey when I was a kid, so I'm like, I'm so super excited that my son's playing now. But it's a full-time job, you know, and trying to balance out, you know, how can I get appointments in on early Saturday morning, you know, to pick up orders or to take an order and then get in the car and still make it to the rink on time and, you know, that kind of thing. That's the hardest part really for me is trying to turn myself off.
You know, I totally get that. I do.
You know, I've been called a raging workaholic. I'll get here at, you know, sometimes 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll get home 9 o'clock at night, and then I'll have my laptop with me. I'm like, let's see what's going on. And I'll start doing emails and I'll be up till midnight doing emails, you know, sleep real quick, get up, do it again.
And I'm curious, is it because this is your passion? Is that part of what makes it hard to turn off?
It's exactly what it is. You know, it's exactly what it is. We run a pretty smooth ship here. Myself and my associate Chandler, who's in college. She is a genius graphic design major. And we just, you know, over all the years of trial and error and a lot of error, learning from the mistakes that I made, where we run really smooth now. You know, it's just, so it's not that I have anxiety because I need to take care of something that I forgot, or, you know, something's messed up, or, you know, all of the things that can possibly go wrong in a day with, you know, a client load. It's just, there's always more that I want to do. So learning to turn that off has been an issue for me. So Wednesday morning, okay, so I have a history of a back issue. Like I said, I was a cyclist and I had a pretty bad crash during a race. Mm-hmm. And I have a joint in my sacrum that every so often pops out. Oof. And it is excruciating, painful, and it's very debilitating where I can't even walk. So Wednesday morning before I came in, I was moving an air conditioner at home, and I popped that joint out.
Oh, no.
And I knew it as soon as I did it, and I was like, son of a gun, I can't believe I just did this again. And I literally couldn't walk. So called my chiropractor friend. I said, you know, I got to come in to see you. I just blew that joint out again. And I was good, man. I got a good 6 years out of the last adjustment. you know. I said, but I did it again. I said, you know, crap, I got, you know, thankfully it was Wednesday. I had order appointments coming in. I had no sessions going that day. So I was able to, you know, go to the chiropractor in the morning, get, you know, a quick adjustment and work on like the pain. Grabbed an ice pack and a heat pad, came in, got through Wednesday. Yesterday morning, had my heat pad. I was laying on the floor in the studio.
Wow.
Because I had a session yesterday afternoon, and we were going outside, and daylight savings time is Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to push the session off because it was a high school senior. You know, she doesn't get out of school early enough to have light at the end of the day. And I was like, no, I got to shoot the session. You know, whether I can walk or not, I'll figure it out.
Mm.
So a couple of Aleve, a couple of Sudafed to keep me awake, you know, and a heat pad.
Oh,
and you know, it's funny, once I start shooting,
mm-hmm.
the adrenaline kicks in and I completely forget about the pain. I mean, I was literally hobbling. I was, you know, it was hard for me even just to pick up my light stand to carry it around outside.
Uh-huh.
But I completely forget about the pain. I don't think about it. I just get into the session, and it was phenomenal. I got home and I locked up.
Oh.
You know, I locked up. So I caught the chiropractor this morning before I came in to hook up with you for, you know, for the interview here.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sitting on a heat pad right now, actually.
Oh, well, thank you for being willing to chat with me this morning. Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
But you know, and that's the thing too. It's part of being a workaholic is that, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't think I've been taking a sick day in probably 15 years.
Wow.
Never missed a job for anything, you know. That's another one of those things, the hardest thing about being in business is turning yourself off and you know,
yeah,
you have to be there.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of how I was raised.
And you know, especially when you're doing what you love, I found that is definitely true more and more in my case. It's taken me years to get to the point where, as I like to call it, for me to be true to myself as far as doing what I really love, which is art and photography in this podcast. And so now when I wake up in the morning every day, I can't wait to get to work because I'm doing what I love. You know, I'm passionate about it. Now rewind years ago when I was, when I first started freelancing, I did everything wrong. I took on the wrong kinds of clients, charged the wrong thing. And then it was really me dragging my feet and I was working myself into the ground because, well, I'd taken on too many clients and I wasn't charging enough, you know, but it was a whole different feel to it. But
sure.
Now that I'm doing what I love, like you said, it's like even if you get home at a reasonable hour, it's like, oh, let's check email and see what's going on, you know, because you're doing something that you love to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I remember, you know, this is a great story for people who are just starting out or thinking about like getting a studio going. My first studio, I have a problem staying in one place for a long time. I thrive on change.
Mm-hmm.
I did this whole blog post about evolution in your career, evolution in photography, you know, evolving just to stay alive. You go back to social Darwinism. If you don't evolve, you're going to perish. So, you know, people say 20 years into your career now, full time, like, how do you stay so relevant? It's like, I'm always learning. I learn something new every day. I'm constantly evolving. When I built my first studio, which is about a little more than a mile up the road from where I am now, I'll never forget, it was my very first studio, opened it, you know, got the place built, put together,
mm-hmm.
you know, got the phone plugged in, the phone, the phone line turned on. When the phone rang the first time, I thought I was going to throw up.
Really?
I was like, holy crap, this is real. The phone's ringing. This is an actual client. I better get my act together, you know? And I, you know, that fear,
mm-hmm.
that, like you said, mm-hmm. you know, the fear when you're first starting out and not being able to connect with a client because you're constantly thinking about you know, are you doing stuff? Are you doing your photography part of it right? I remember, you know, I literally almost threw up. The phone rang. I said, oh my God, I'm going to answer this phone. I'm going to get my first client, you know, portrait client in a studio, and I'm going to mess up, you know?
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, once I got over that initial fear, then I was like, hey, you know what? This is freaking cool. You know, this is cool to take something that I've always loved to do and to be able to earn a living at it. Mm. It's a joy, you know, and I would never take it for granted.
There's nothing like it, really.
No,
really.
There's not.
You know, speaking of clients and the phone ringing, what have you found to be the most effective techniques for getting new clients for your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I just had this conversation this morning with my chiropractor. word of mouth. Like I spend almost nothing on marketing and advertising. Social media for me. Mm-hmm. Right now, in the senior season, it's Instagram. Mm. Facebook isn't dead, but you know, there's two different client bases. The parents are on Facebook, and the kids are on Instagram. So,
exactly.
It's pretty cool to have those two outlets there to hit one client base and then the other client base. You know, can do it in one shot now. Mm-hmm. So, but really, word of mouth. I love at the end of a session or when someone comes to pick up their orders, their portrait order, and they're so overjoyed and they're thrilled. And it's like, oh my God, thank you so much. And, you know, they're thanking me. Everything. I smile and I say, great, go tell a friend, you know, and tell all your friends, here, take some business cards. Now, I'll joke around mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't have to because they will. But when I joke around like that, and, you know, I'll get two phone calls the next day.
Wow.
You know, wow. Or I'll get an email saying, hey, you know, I saw so-and-so's pictures and I talked to them about it. And, you know, that's absolutely the most effective. So my chiropractor this morning, now this is outside of our industry, but this goes to what we do as well as photographers. He was talking about he was paying $800 a month for Yellow Pages. And I was like, why? I was like, Brad, why are you using Yellow Pages? He was like, I don't know. I just dropped them. I said, you need a Google listing. Mm-hmm. You need a Google listing. And then you need a solid social media presence and word of mouth. That's what you need. I said, you shouldn't be spending money on advertising. You know, mm-hmm. it should be coming from you just, you know, through, you know, get something going on social media with Instagram, have like Instagram contests or something like that with your clients and get referrals that way. And he goes, yeah, that's exactly kind of what we did. He hired a social media marketing company and they hit up Twitter, Instagram, you know, stuff like that for his corporate clients. So, like he'll hit up a LinkedIn or whatever, and they're just kind of like doing social posts, uh-huh. and he's been getting clients that way. I said, Brad, it's the same thing for me. I said, if it wasn't for Instagram, you know, for the senior market, you know, I would probably have to advertise except for, you know, the kids that know what I do. So,
yeah,
you know, the word of mouth thing, the thing about word of mouth is the clients that are going to come in are already pre-qualified,
mm-hmm.
okay, because they've seen the work from the person who referred them, to you, they've seen the work and they pretty much have an idea on how much it cost. So
right. When
someone calls and say, hey, you did so-and-so's pictures. I was really impressed. I want to schedule an appointment. I'm like, perfect. And because they know what to expect already. So that is the ideal client. If you did, you know, just posting via, you know, ads in a newspaper or magazines or something like that, they're just going by what they see in a piece of paper. There's no verbal communication there.
Right.
You know, even with Instagram, you can do really cool stuff with Instagram and, you know, the stuff that you post, the text that you post with it, you know, to draw attention to yourself. But until a person actually visually, you know, that the auditory sense, you know, until they hear it coming from someone that they trust.
Absolutely.
You know, it's an uphill battle. So, you know, getting people to talk for you, get people to market for you.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. It makes all the difference in the world when a friend or a family member, you know, says, hey, you should use this guy. Look, and plus, look what he did for me. You know, that's just game over.
Well, here's the story. So I started shooting for this insurance company last week, and I'm going to be doing a project that's probably going to last well into next year. And the girl who hired me, she's the marketing director for this company, was a former intern of mine from the class of 2006. at Cheshire High School. She did a job shadow her junior year. She did an internship her senior year. She worked with me the summer between high school graduation and her first year of college. And now she's this big marketing director for this huge insurance company. And who'd she call? they're doing a rebranding project. She called. And she goes, all right. And she was a marketing and advertising major with a photography minor.
Wow.
And I said, Kim, why don't you do the pictures?
That's what I was wondering.
And she goes, I don't have the experience you have. And she's like, I need to concentrate on my job as the marketing director and the rebranding of this company. So I need to hire someone with the technical proficiency and someone I know who's going to, just kill the job. So I thought of you. And I said, okay, let's do it. So, we got together and shot it. And like I said, there was a guy at the company I met at the end of his board meeting. He's asking me, he's going to refer his daughter to me for her wedding.
Oh, so, there you go.
Literally word of mouth, I call it FaceTime too. Mm-hmm. People say, how do you get, you're marking with all your seniors and stuff. I said, I keep my face in front of them too. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge sports fan. So I love in my senior market going to the high school, going to the different games and just being there and cheering on the kids, being there and cheering on the kids. The parents see me out there. The kids see me out there. They know I care.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's genuine. And that's worth more than, any monetary advertising you can possibly do.
Right on. Wow. Yeah. I'm over here taking notes as you're talking. And I do this for every interview where I end up with literally like 3 pages of notes. And so I've written down relationships, referrals, being genuine, FaceTime. I mean, these are things that they go so much farther than an ad in the yellow pages or what have you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm blown away, by the way, that you don't really have to spend anything on advertising. I mean, I think that's just a testament to
about $1,200 a year. Maybe.
That's it. Wow. Yeah. That's a testament to how great you are at building relationships and making people happy and getting those referrals. Let's move on to lessons learned. Tell us, what's the most common mistake that you see professional photographers make today or that you yourself have made?
Oh, okay. So every now and then I still fall into the same trap. But the biggest mistake I see professionals, people who've been doing it for a while, is trying to do it all. Not only trying to appease every client, because not every person is your client.
Mm-hmm.
That's something it took me for a while to learn. And once I learned it, the life got so much happier.
Yeah.
We talk about it at seminars, when I used to work, help with spa and Seniors Ignite and stuff, was not every person out there is your client. So it comes down to not trying to photograph everybody. Photograph the people who want your service and are willing to pay for your service. As far as doing it all, I used to be a photographer, a builder, a plumber, an electrician, an accountant, a lawyer, an ad agency, a web designer, a graphic artist, a receptionist.
Oh my goodness.
All that stuff under one hat, because you're the business owner and it all falls on your lap.
Mm-hmm.
The buck stops with you, so to speak. So, because I've come from a trade school background, doing a lot of the building stuff is kind of easy for me. So I do that part. I enjoy doing that part. I am not an accountant. I am not a bookkeeper. I'm not a lawyer,
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find the professionals whose expertise is in that area to do that stuff for you. You have to learn to let some of that responsibility go. Find people that you can trust to do that stuff. There's a guy I know, a photographer, who has on his business card, he had a bifold business card, it folded like a green card.
Yep.
And it had his name, it said specializing in, and there were like 50 items on there. I'm like,
oh my,
you're not especially, you're going from aerial photography to underwater photography to pet photography, to commercial photography to food. I'm like, not specializing in anything. He's like, you just listed all these things, forensics. I mean, come on, just find the one thing that you're really good at, do one thing 100% efficient versus 99 things, 1% efficient.
Yeah.
And you'll be successful. So learning to delegate and get this stuff, off your plate and concentrate on the thing that you know that you're the best at, that you're the expert in. And letting other people you know, other professionals, you know, take care of stuff. Accounting, oh my God, you know, bookkeeping, what a nightmare. I mean, you know, right brain people, if you're a right brain photographer and streaming on the creative side, you have no clue how to do your taxes. And just come right out and say,
Yeah, I agree.
Don't even attempt it. Just, you know, hire a bookkeeper, hire a really good accountant, you know, do that. You know, call the PPA, call the PPA accounting department and have them hook you up with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, don't try to do everything yourself. I have learned so much in my career from the kids, you know, from the interns that I've mentored over the years, because they're doing stuff that, you know, I don't have time to learn, because mm-hmm. I'm always shooting or dealing with a client. So they have time to sit and play. Matter of fact, my assistant Chandler, you know, was telling me today she just finished a project at school, a book that she's doing. Now she's going to start working on creating fonts and stuff. I'm like, dude, I would love to learn how to do that stuff, you know? Uh-huh. And she's becoming the expert in graphics. She's becoming the expert in InDesign, the expert in Photoshop, mm-hmm. the expert in all that stuff. So I don't have the time to learn it. Mm-hmm. As much, you know, when I do have time to sit and play, I'll sit and play and I'll learn really cool stuff in Photoshop and stuff. But for me, I have to be in front of my client and I have to be photographing.
Well, you recognize what's important.
Exactly. You know, and in having somebody else to do the stuff that you're not good at.
Yeah.
Okay. Is key. Matt Hoagland, actually, Matt and Allison, his wife Allison Ragsdale, they are genius with this stuff. Matt's like, I don't know how to do this. I'm going to find someone to do it for me. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, I don't have time to retouch all day. I'm going to find someone to do it for me.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I don't have time. You know, I'm going to find somebody to do it for me. I'm like, dude, you're brilliant. You know, I said, but that leaves a whole lot of time during the day. What do you do with yourself? You know?
Right.
And
right.
It's like, unlike you, I take time off and I enjoy life, you know?
That was a big part of the conversation, or a good meaty part of the conversation with Matt, actually, because he was talking about their decision to finally begin outsourcing the retouching of their photos. And, you know, yes. He said his wife, Allison, before they decided to do that, she would be in tears because she'd be up late at night and she'd have to have all of these photos retouched by the next day. And there was some initial fear with outsourcing it because they were afraid that the clients would notice. She said, right. Well, he said, and she agreed that nobody noticed. And no, all of a sudden, they had all this time to do other stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
I get jealous as heck. He's a big fly fisherman. I have a good friend of mine who's a military vet who works with Rivers for Recovery. It's, you know, big fly fishing thing for, you know, PTSD, you mm-hmm. know, and stuff. And I watched, you know, Matt's out there fishing. He's enjoying his time. I'm like, dude, isn't there stuff going on at your studio? He's like, I got it covered. There's people doing it for me. I said, see, that's smart. That's the pitfall. The biggest mistake people make is trying to do it all, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. that for me, like we would go back to one of the questions earlier about, you know, the life balance thing and being able to turn myself off, you know, that challenge. I'm learning.
Right. It's a journey for everybody.
It is a journey,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's a question for you. What's one thing you wish you knew before you stepped into photography professionally?
Oh, like how hard I was going to work. Yeah, you know, which, you know, I tell people, like, people look at it like, dude, you left your house at 7 o'clock this morning. It's 10 o'clock. You're just walking through the door. Mm. I said, yeah, man, I had a great day, though. I had a great day. So I don't look at what I do as work. I don't. I consider this, like, I don't know, party central over here sometimes, you know. You know, because it is. It's enjoyable. But one of the things I wish I knew, okay, and I teach this to the kids. Like, I'll go speak to, like, the Future Business Leaders of America group at the high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll ask me, you know, what's one thing you wish you knew? And I said, well, you know, people think I have this glamorous job as this photographer photographing all your friends and doing really cool, you know, traveling around the country photographing for companies and stuff. What people don't realize, and this goes back to my pet peeve with art schools that teach you how to be an artist but not how to earn a living at it. Mm-hmm. Goes back to that, is that when you turn professional, until you get a handle like Matt did of delegating stuff out, is that 10% of what I do is photography now, and 90% of what I do is running a business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I wish I knew that. I thought this was going to be just, you know, all, you know, candy and roses and stuff, you know. It's just, going to be a blast all day long, just taking pictures all day long. And then, you know, you come down to it, 10% of what you do is actually, you know, creating, and 90% is actually doing, you know, running a business.
It's a rude awakening for a lot of people.
It's a very rude awakening. A lot of people don't understand that. So that I kind of wish I prepared myself more. I wish I knew more about the industry prior to understand that part of it. And then the most important thing, and this is where everybody starts. I don't care if you're a photographer, a painter, a sculptor, a graphic designer, is how to price your work. What's the formula for pricing your work so you can earn a living at it and doing it properly?
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, people say, how do you know how much to charge for an 8x10? Well, you know, you put a thing up on the wall, you throw a dart at it, whatever it lands at, that's to price it, you know? Or, you know, I've heard so many crazy theories over the years. Oh, you take the cost of your product, you multiply it by 3, you add 10%, just weird stuff. And I'm like, wow. There's got to be more of a scientific way to doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I learned it from Joy Vertz, actually. And Joy Vertz, her pricing for profit seminars was that, no, there's a formula. And it comes down to, you know, how much do you need to earn or how much do you want to earn based on how many hours a week you want to work, take all of your expenses, take all of your overhead, right? Mm-hmm. And do the math, put it all together, and this is what you need to be charging. And then you break it down by product. And I was like, Jesus, I wish I knew this 20 years ago.
Yeah, a logical way to do it.
And, you know, I've made a very comfortable living, you know, up to this. And, then, you know, the last couple of years, once I was like, wait, I learned a new formula and what I believe to be the correct formula for pricing your work. All of a sudden, I'm like, wait, this is fun again, because now I'm making money now, you know? And not only am I having a blast every day, but wow, there's money in the bank account. And that's, I mean, had I known this 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, you know? So yeah, that's huge. And that's, again, that's one of those pitfalls. You can be the smartest, the best, most creative artist in the world. If you don't know how to make a living at it, then it's almost for nothing. You know, there's no reason you should be a starving artist. There's absolutely no reason for it.
I don't even like that term, starving artist. My heckles raise.
It's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm going to erase it from my vocabulary today.
Good.
It's gone.
And you know, we actually just released Joy's interview this week.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, actually it was, what is today? Friday. So we released it 2 days ago.
No kidding.
And I encourage our listeners to go check out episode 47 titled Pricing with Joy Vertz. And in it, she offers a free course on how to price your photography, which is a huge pain point.
That's huge.
Yeah. You know, and it's, I was this way when I started out, and even talking to other photographers who were just starting. Initially, it seems like a lot of people do the race towards the bottom mentality by default. How cheap can I price my services? You know, I have to be cheaper than the next guy, which is a horrible way to run your business, but it just seems like the first thing that we tend to do. And I think a lot of people are also, I think they're afraid to price themselves according to what they're worth. And I also don't think that they realize their worth, the value that they bring as a photographer as well.
Oh, that was huge for me. That you just nailed it. That was huge for me. So I remember when I first started out, okay, especially in the senior industry, I'm in a high, what's called a high volume area. So most of the studios around here are volume portrait studios. Okay. Just, you know, like meat markets, just cranking kids through the door. Do average work and make a crap load of money off the average work. I had no interest in that. I'm a photographer's photographer, and I wanted to create really cool stuff. So I had no interest in doing volume work. And when I first started out, I said, how can I create art, like good fine art stuff that you might see, like portraits in Vanity Fair or something that people could afford? And that mentality, that thought process held me back for a good 5 years, the first 5 years of my career. It's like, how can I do this at something that I think people can afford? What I wasn't looking at is, geez, I wonder how much people would pay for my work. You know, looking at it the correct way is how much, you know, what is my value? What I, you know, value perceived, that term value perceived.
Right.
I was like, what, you know, I kept thinking, how can I do something totally epic and make it affordable for people, for like the common person. Like, you know, I grew up in a blue collar family, so I had blue collar mentality, know? And if you try to be a blue collar photographer, you're going to end up in lower income, you know, the lower income tax bracket.
Absolutely.
If you do that. So yeah, no, that's huge. I feel blessed that I became friends with Joy. You know, I just spent some time with her. We went to a friend's wedding. I got to go out to Wisconsin. I got to see a lot of how she built her incredible business and her expertise. So again, there you go. The hardest, the biggest thing that people make mistakes in, you know, when they first get started, you know, not knowing how to price your work. There's so many resources, there's so much education out there. You have to be able to find the stuff that works. And, you know, I can refer Matt, I could refer Joy, you know, for things. And she made a world of difference for me, you know, and they call me Grandpa Jones. I've been around a while, you know, I'm like the elder statesman in the group. I'm like, I'm not old. What the heck, you know? But even after all these years in business, I've learned something from her that has been just absolutely huge for me, you know?
She is quite awesome. Yes. Co-sign that.
she's a riot too.
Oh, well, now tell us, is there a particular photography resource, a tool, online course, a book, anything that you'd like to recommend to our listeners that would help them with their businesses?
Wow, there's so much out there. It can be like totally overwhelming. You know, our industry changes so fluidly from technology to imaging trends and stuff. And you just try to stay on top of it, you know, without geeking out and getting all caught up in equipment and products and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I see people spend so much time and money going to seminars and, you know, investing time and money going to these things and then not really doing anything with the education. That it always kind of bothers me. You know, Creative Live is, I think, a phenomenal resource for education in all aspects. They have, you know, great seminars with, you know, everything from business to shooting to technology, software, you know, image editing stuff. I saw Rachel Brenke, the Law Tog. I saw Rachel do it.
Yeah.
Now I watched hers, and I was like, wow, this woman's got it going on over here.
I'd love to have her on the show.
You should get Rach. Just a brilliant woman. Holy cow. And she was on Creative Live, and I was like, what an amazing resource Creative Live is. It really is for education.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much out there. There's so much free education out there. One of the things in our industry, again, being around for a long, long time, you know, pick your seminars wisely and where you're going to go and listen to what everybody has to say and pick out the things that you believe are true and that will help you in your career. But then, you know, take action on it. 20 years of going to seminars, and I used to go to NEEP every year, New England Institute of Photography, which was a phenomenal resource. The PPA affiliate schools, totally recommend any of the PPA affiliate schools. I used to go to NEEP every year, and it just the camaraderie of being around people. You learn more sitting at the bar after the end of the day than you do sitting in a seminar. You do when you get the conversations talking to people. A great resource for me is I'm pretty loyal to B&H in New York City. They are, you know, back in the day, I never wanted to have equipment UPS to me. I was like, I used to get in my car. You know, I could get in my car. It depends on what time I leave going from Connecticut to New York City. I had to leave after rush hour. I would get in my car and go down. I could be in the parking lot across from B&H in about an hour and 10 minutes.
Wow.
It's about an hour and 20 minutes by train. But I would go in there and I would physically, you know, handle the equipment that I wanted to purchase and, you know, be able to talk to the guys behind the counter and stuff who are so knowledgeable about everything in terms of gear and what you can do with it and what's better than the next thing and all that stuff. I love those guys at B&H. They're awesome for me. Blogs, resource. I follow a bunch of different blogs, not always blogs that are in our industry either. There's a few bloggers that are, you know, fashion photographers and stuff that will every now and then just say, hey, I did something really cool today. And I took this light and I did this to it and created this image. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. So every now and then just pop, you know, find some really cool bloggers out there. Photographers that are not in your industry. If you're a wedding photographer, look at a portrait photographer's blog. Or if you're a commercial photographer, look at a portrait photographer's blog. And if there's one thing you could pick up from something every single day, you get exponentially better in a relatively short amount of time. And then, you know, Instagram accounts, you know, follow some really cool people on Instagram to keep your, you know, inspirational, keep your head in the game, and your desire to keep getting better. And that's the thing is, if for me, like I said, after all this time, I'm still obsessed with creating stuff. And when I see someone do something really cool, I get really excited about it. And I'll reach out and I'll send a note. I say, dude, that was sick. You know, that was really cool. And I'm rather than asking them how they did it, I'll try and figure out how they did it, you know?
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
Because then I think you learn more trying to figure out how they did it and then just outright asking, you know?
Awesome. Well, you know, my final question to you, but one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online.
So it's interesting. I'm actually going through a kind of a rebranding thing now. I've been on a 5-year plan to exit out of the consumer industry. Mm-hmm. And more into commercial work. So kind of putting the new website together. It's joey-jones.net or joey-jones.net. And then social media, it's joeyjones65. That's my Instagram, my Pinterest page, what else? Twitter, joeyjones65 on Twitter. That's everywhere. That's awesome. Chandler's department.
that makes Chandler. It easy for us.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm always out there, so I try to post like interesting, compelling stuff. I'm trying to get back into, you know, revive my blog a little bit. It just gets to the point where I don't have time to blog because I spend so much more time like with Instagram and, you know, the different social media things. But I'm taking a different turn with my blog, which is connected to joey-jones.net. So I'm going to be putting some pretty cool stuff up there, you know, in the coming months.
Exciting stuff. Wow. Awesome. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Joey. I really enjoyed it. And frankly, I hate to end the interview right now because I feel like I could talk for another couple hours. I really could. But thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing. Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center.